Welcome to episode 21 of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. One of the things I love about doing this podcast is that I get to hear about an artist's history in their craft. And I get to listen to the heart of the artist. I gain a glimpse into the things about their craft and career that excite them and also that frustrate them. Just because we work in the art form we love and we get paid very well for it sometimes, it doesn't mean we're not disappointed by the nature of the business and the industry. Artists sometimes have to find ways to survive not only the disappointments, but sometimes the radical shifts that happen within any industry or market. This has been true for animator Mike Suri. Even though he's had the privilege to work with some of the greatest animators in the world, for the two most significant studios in the history of traditional animation, Mike has had his fair share of struggles and frustrations, even after the success of Lion King. In this episode, Mike talks to us about working in Paris on Hunchback, and then his return to Disney in LA to work on the many features that followed. And Mike will share his thoughts with us about the recent film, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
So from there you went to Hunchback.
Hunchback.
So you know, I'm feeling okay, this is going really well. And then they're going to go on to Hunchback, and I was going to do The Court Jester. And I went, oh. Like at first I thought, oh, really? This is like a small character in the movie. I went, and they went, yeah, we want you to do that. And Tony was going to do the Gargoyles. Now, back then, we thought, okay, we were Timon and Pumbaa, so why don't you make us the Gargoyles? We'll do them together. You know, it made logical sense in our brain to say, okay, we'll do it together. But they felt like there wasn't enough for the Gargoyles for two people, so they thought, oh, let's give it to Tony.
I was a little, like, not insulted, but I sort of was playing a little bit like I was surprised that I was getting, you know, from the success of the movie Lion King.
What's his name? The Court
Clopin.
Clopin, that's right.
So I rolled my head back to that infamous day of driving to Bill Dennis's office to think I was being fired, and it wasn't. And I thought, okay, I've been given something that's not huge, but let me make it huge. Let me make it great. You know, I'll embrace that. So I remember telling Don Hahn at the time, saying, okay, yeah, I'd be happy to do this. It'll be great, you know. And then he said, well, actually, we're going to have part of the project's going to be done in France, and so we might send you to Paris if you want to go to Paris to work there on the opening sequence, because a lot of the animation will be done by a French studio and they're in Paris, and it'd be good to have somebody from here, leadership, working there. And I went, oh, okay, for how long? He goes, for about 6 months. And I was like, oh, okay, wait a minute, I have three kids. And so I worked out a deal with them where I would go for 3 weeks, come back for a week, go for 3 weeks, come back for a week.
Okay.
So I flew back and forth.
Yeah.
And so the studio at that point is, you know, a billionaire. So they're all the apartments that they sent me, along with somebody from layout, somebody from different apartments, were visiting the studio in Paris. So we all would have apartments in Paris. And they're all were like, this person has an apartment that out their window is Notre Dame. This person has an apartment that the Louvre. This person has an apartment that looks at the Eiffel Tower. Everybody had amazing apartments.
Cool.
So I lived in one that was right by the Arc de Triomphe, like out my window. It's right there. I could fill my window. They have a town just outside of Paris called Montreuil. And that's where the studio was. And it's not a very good area, but it's like a warehouse area, and that's where the studio was. So for me to take the train, you know, you go, I had no sense of direction, because I'm like, okay, I go up the stairs, am I pointing northwest? I don't know where right now. I couldn't point to where any French landmark is. So I decided, well, I'll learn to ride, get comfortable riding my bike. So on a Sunday, I went out on the Champs-Élysées, which is right where I was, and I'd say, okay, Sunday I'm going to ride and see if I can handle all this traffic and not get killed. And I felt okay doing it, and I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to map myself to work. And see what that takes. And it took me like 30 minutes, but I loved it because I could see the city. I could drive and I'd stop at a light and really, you can really take in how the city's laid out.
Yeah, I'm sure it's confusing. I've seen maps of it.
Yeah, it is. But again, like anything, if you have a chance to, it's like the London Underground. Have you ever seen the map of the tube station or the subway system?
Yeah.
It's just like what the. It's like an intestine of a.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? But once you everything's color coded, so when you get to Trafalgar, station, and then your book it's blue, and Trafalgar it's blue. And they have blue lines. Oh, and then they'd have multiple stations with line colors, and you stay blue, and the blue would go down that hallway. You go down the hallway. Oh, there I am. It's really easy because it's so well color coded that you can figure out the mess that's on a paper. You're like, oh my god. So Paris is a little bit like that. Once you see that it's all like just circles, and then how it runs along the river, and it was easy for me to figure out a path to work, and so I would go through Bastille area, the Arc de Triomphe, past the Louvre, and I'm like smart enough to go, I'm riding my bike to work, and I'm passing all these places that people dream about seeing. I'm like, so I did that for 6 months, and that was really a great experience. Met some really great people, and I'd come back. And I would get the dirt on what's going on at the studio. We'd all moved into the new building by that point, too. So now the Hat Building was the first
the
production.
The Hat Building was the first production. Let me just...
So that experience led me to go back into story at the end of Princess and the Frog and go to work on Rapunzel again, which was now Tangled. Then I went into animation on Tangled. And very slow. I mean, like, again, at that point I hadn't animated in Maya for so long. So it took me a while to get back in, but everybody was so advanced beyond me. Like, they knew, like, oh, you do this, you click over here. Oh, yeah, you just use this tool and this tool, and you combine them, and then you can do this with the rig. I'm like, fuck, what? I'm like, huh? So I didn't enjoy that. I did maybe...
What character did you work on?
A bunch of them. It was Rapunzel... The mother, the drunk guy. Worked on him with the slide in the door. What's the password? Whatever he says. I got to do the scene where her mother stabs Flynn. And by then I was sort of getting frustrated anyways. So it was like I was all into it. So when I showed the scene to somebody, they go, "Wow, it really looks like she's stabbing him." Oh, I went, yeah. Yeah. And as that movie ran down, I just didn't think that... I don't think that the chemistry or the environment for me didn't seem... It seemed a little colder, different. And I just didn't know if I fit into it. I didn't feel like I fitted in into their... what they were trying to build there.
You always felt like that.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's always there, right? I mean, I can't... I'm always... I always underestimate or what I'm worth, I guess.
We all do that.
Yeah. And I, to a fault, will always think that I'm not the biggest thing in the room when maybe five other people in the room will say, yeah, you are the biggest thing in the room. And I'll think, no, I'm not. But... So... Because there's many times I'm not. I'm just another guy, right? And I've been told and seen many times that to be felt and know that I am not anything but another guy in the room helping get this movie done.
But you've been ranked. You know what your rank is? Haven't you seen there's been lists where they've ranked all the animators? I know you're at least in the top 20.
Somewhere in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw something. Where I was ranked, and was like,
"You think you saw something?"
Well, somebody had put something where they ranked, and I thought it was higher though. I thought it was like 30s or something. I don't know where it was.
I thought you were in the 20s.
Ranked.
So when I talk to people, I'm like, "Mike's in the top 10. He's one of the top 10 animators in the world."
Thanks. I mean, time moves forward. People, a new one, new people come in that are
for sure
that have it. But I mean. my move to DreamWorks after the Disney thing, where I didn't feel like I fit in, and then DreamWorks was talking again, and they wanted to do a 2D CG combo film. I went, okay, this might be a good chance for me to expand what I want, because I don't feel like I can do that here. And so I went back to DreamWorks, and it's just, I didn't know until I got in there that the way they animate, the way they run their animation, how they think about animation is just nothing like Disney. Disney's a lot more organic feeling. Like, it's a little bit more not... It's not perfect. And people are like, that's okay. It's not perfect. Like, I want it to feel perfect. I don't want it to look perfect.
Right.
I mean, I should
get the spirit and character.
Yeah. I mean, they want it to obviously look good, but right. It's not essential. I'm not going to beat you to death to make sure that elbow doesn't, or that arm looks perfectly in perspective.
Right.
You know, if it gets the point, I'm happy with that, you know. Or let's do a workaround. Draw the hand out here then. If you can't do that, draw it here.
Yeah.
DreamWorks, no. You draw like this. It needs to look like this. It needs to look like my hand, you know, everything has to be. So they get so focused on the details that the bigger issue doesn't get addressed. And I'm learning new software. I'm trying to do 2D and CG, where everybody else was sort of, they're either doing one or the other. So I'm taking on trying to do a lot of stuff, and it's taking me a long time, and I just couldn't get my head around it. So I start to flounder a little bit through that, only to the point where I find that the movie's going to be shut down because they just don't feel it has traction to be made. So they're going to cut the staff in half, and I knew that meant that I was probably going to be removed from the movie, and that's where I transitioned back into story. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go back into story. And I've stayed there ever since. And I think they kind of burned me out of animation.
Yeah.
DreamWorks sort of took the fun out of it for me. It wasn't fun anymore. Again, not completely their fault, but I mean, it was a combination of a lot of things. It just made me go, you know what? I enjoy story for the fact that I can play a bigger role in the whole making of a movie. You can control the environments, staging, pace, all that stuff is very much in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Where in animation you're dealing with me picking up a cup and drinking it. Does that look really? Does it really look like he picked up the cup? Does it feel heavy?
Yeah.
You know, that's important stuff, but it's not. I mean, there's bigger things, I think. And as I've gotten older, I went, yeah, I don't know if me animating at 54, you know, trying to get my quota in. I just don't feel like that's where I want to be.
I think it's natural, but since I started directing, I've animated less and less. And
if you're going to give me...
There are certain things I do miss about it, but if I had to sit down and actually work myself through a scene and think about it, I would be sacrificing other things, and I would be getting off track on directing and supervising. But if that's all I had to do, I might enjoy it for a little bit. But for me, I'm more interested in telling the story.
Right.
I'm more interested in the bigger picture than, like you said.
Right.
Because you're enjoying story. You're doing storyboarding and development.
Doing that for the last 6 years. 6 years now. I enjoy it because it has a lot of the similarities to 2D for me. Not in the physical act of drawing, but more just the lifestyle of it. Because a lot of times when I was in 2D and I'd be sitting at my desk working, and I just can't figure out what to do here. I'm stuck. And I'd be able to pick up my scene, pack it up, and go home. And bring it home. Okay, I'm home now, play with kids, or eat something, watch some TV, and then, let me sit down. And then, it's that new angle you're taking, or it's just getting some time away from it, that all of a sudden I go, oh, wait a minute, what if I did this? And I felt more at ease and comfortable. And, next thing you know, I've got 3 hours I've worked at home, but I've solved the problem, and I could bring it in the next day at work, and now I'm moving again. And in the CG world of animation, you couldn't do that. You know, you'd have to be at your desk, work there. You have to physically be there. Story, I can now be given pages. I can go down to the outside sit at a table by the fountain, and I can just thumbnail out my scene. I can work at home. I can work in another country. And I know this. Animation is a grueling schedule, and it's a deadline. and a ramp up to a deadline that goes on like 6 months. Story has like, we got a deadline, we got to get everything together in 3 weeks. So you work hard for 3 weeks, you get to a screening, and if there's a lull for about 3 weeks after that to kind of refigure, okay, what are the changes? How do we readdress this? You know, how do we move forward from the screening? And that I enjoy,
yeah,
because that is more life-friendly than animation. And I thought to myself, well, I did it for 20-something years, doing that grind of working on a movie, movie's over, get sick, get better, get ready to go back into work, go back to work, slowly ramp up, get going, deep into it, working nights, 7 days a week. And then you push.
They did a lot of overtime there, didn't they?
Disney, yeah. I mean, a lot of it was, they didn't want you to do it, but you had to do it. There's no way you're going to get the movie done. Certainly as a supervisor, because you're spending a good part of your day going over other people's stuff, but I had to get my quota done, so I'd have to do it either at night or I'd do it on weekends. A lot of times I would try to get my scenes in because the deadline for them is usually Sunday afternoon. So I would go in, I would try to get as much stuff done and then try to pull it all together Saturday. I'd go in like Saturday around 7 at night and then just work as late as I had to work to get it done. So if I had to work all the way into the morning, so like 5 or 6, I would do that, knowing that I would just sleep and Sunday would be my recoup day. Let them look at it. Monday they'd either give me notes or no notes.
What a schedule.
And I guess it's pretty much still like that. A lot of them, I've heard people at Frozen and Tangled was like that. Frozen and all of them, they seem to be that same grinding schedule. Where they have you come in working Saturdays and then you bank hours and they'll give you that time off, at the end of the production. But it's a formula that seemed to work, right? Because their movies were hugely successful. So there's that I quantify them to say, hey, you know what? If we work them really hard like this, our movies are super successful. It's a case of them believing in that. But, of course, that's not the case. As their movies start to move forward, they'll start to deal with the same problem we dealt with, which is interest will start to waver. I'm sure like movies like Spider-Man coming out is going to change the game a bit for how...
Yeah, what'd you think of Spider-Man?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I did. I really did. I thought it's hands down, it's got everything fresh and different. It really says CG animation. It's sort of what Toy Story or what those movies came out, what it did to 2D, which is it just made you look at 2D going... So now you look at a movie like that, that is well art directed, looks great, moves great.
But the story was well written.
Well written, and it has just a very appealing look to it that is not like any other CG film we've seen. That you can't say, is that a one-off, or is that changing how we now look at how physically a CG character should be in an environment? Like, are the days of making this CG world, like this booth, making the paisley look real, make your skin tone look real, your hairs look real, but your cartoon character, I mean, that's what we do now, right? Everything has to look ultra, like it's believable, real environments, but is it going to be, does a movie like that push more of the art director and the art production design to be more of an influence on the movie itself versus it the way it is now? It's just a normal process, You design it, he models it, she rigs it, she animates it. It just goes through its normal standard look. So all the movies start looking the same, right? I mean, Illumination movies, DreamWorks, Disney, they all could be the same world. But then you see Spider-Man, no, completely different. Can you have that over and over and over again? No, but it does make you think that...
It opens up the door to bring
right.
Finally, somebody's
right.
Done it.
Something's that's brought the charm, a little bit of that textury, drawing, organic feel into a very controlled CG world where it's not super controlled. Yeah. And it looks fantastic.
It does. To me, I found it very cinematic.
Yeah.
Unlike many other films.
Right.
Animated films.
Well thought, well, like very live action-y.
The pacing, the way they do the ellipses, where you're cutting from one thing to the next thing, and it's perfectly balanced for the story, but it's not something you would naturally
right.
think you would do.
Right.
And it works great.
Yeah. Yeah, I was blown away by it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's going to be a game changer for the industry. I'm kind of curious if it will. And as I sit on a movie now in development, I wonder if any of that has an influence on on how they look at moving forward, but yeah. I doubt it.
It comes from the director. The director has to have the vision and mm-hmm. the writer together
yeah.
in order to create yeah. that canvas.
Yeah. I mean, you could be in the meetings and people could say all the right things like, oh, we need to push this. We need to be different. We need to be, really sell ourselves as being something unique. But then they'll do it and it'll look just like every other movie they've done. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in there you have to have somebody dig their heels in and go, no, it needs to have this kind of look.
Right.
I think we can do it. You know, well, we don't know how to do that. Well, let's find a way. That's how Star Wars and all those other films, you know, George Lucas said he wanted to feel like the camera, the characters, or the camera was going through environments. Well, we don't know how to do that. I don't care. Figure it out. And they did.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's kind of comes to that where you want to challenge people to find a way to get what you see as a pre-art in a movie that looks cool, but then when the movie comes out, you go, oh, kind of like the artwork. How come that didn't make it in? It always goes through multiple changes right. to it gets watered down to a safer version, right?
Yes.
And I just don't know if it's, I mean, the industry in itself, the idea of a DreamWorks or Disney studio, I don't know how much longer that'll last, that template, because there is so much, you know, streaming stuff now.
Right.
And people working all over the world, and it's not as bad to do that now as it was decades ago with having somebody animate something in another country, because you have to just trust that he's physically sending you the work and it gets to you, all that. Now that doesn't even have to be an issue, you know. So yeah, I don't know, we'll have to see. I mean, it's exciting now because of all the stuff that's streaming and the need for content is everywhere.
It is.
So if it's not Netflix, it's going to be DreamWorks or Comcast. Everybody's going to start having their streaming engine that they need right. to fill stuff on.
They're going to need a lot of animation for the family market.
I mean, Netflix was one of the ones that, you know, because Disney's pulling all their stuff off of there. And so now they have to go, okay, I don't know if it was, well, I heard of it. I know that they said, like, Moana was the one chosen animated choice for kids.
Really?
It was, like, a huge spike of, like, interest in that one movie. Because they're getting high-quality animation, and it's an interesting story that kids don't mind seeing over and over and over and over again. And so that's what they're trying to do at Netflix now. What I heard is trying to get directors like Chris Williams, who was at Disney, is now there, trying to make that high-end movie under their umbrella and start making, like they are with live action, they're making great shows. They want to compete. They want to be able to say, come back and right. know that we're going to have tons of stuff for you to look at that's going to be different and cool and enjoyable.
Mike will be with me again for one more episode. And there he'll talk about the departure of Katzenberg from Disney and Disney's acquisition of Pixar, as well as Mike's own departure from Disney to work in the story department at DreamWorks, where he is today. In 2 weeks, maritime painter John Stobart will be with us, talking about his fascinating career as a painter. John has not only survived as an oil painter, painting what he likes to paint, he's made a very good living at it, and he loves to encourage young people to consider taking up a career in the arts, so much so that he's made a series of instructional videos that aired on PBS. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. You'll find the show notes at schaefercreative.studio. Consider supporting this podcast at our Patreon page, and please share us on social media. Music is by Lee Rosevere.